Hello, and welcome to episode 134 of The Ethical Life, a place where each week we talk about the intersection of ethics and modern life. I'm Scott Rotta, social media manager for Lee Enterprises, and I am joined as always by Rick Kite, who is the head of the Ethics Institute at Viterbo University in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Scott.
It used to be that, with a few exceptions, actors and musicians were simply performers. Yes, we might have had an occasional look into their private lives, but most people simply enjoyed their films and their music. But for better or worse, social media has turned performers into brands, and they often find themselves in the middle of our political and cultural storms. Today, it's probably difficult to be a Kid Rock fan and a Democrat, and we all saw the many conspiracy theories made up about Taylor Swift as she takes positions often at odds with Republicans. Rick, do you think artists should make their political views public? And how much should those views affect their fans?
I've changed my mind about this, and I don't think they should make their views public, but I think that's mainly because of the context in which those views get aired. I don't think it's possible for celebrities right now in the social media age, where that is where so much of our public discourse gets carried out. I don't think it's possible to have a real reasoned and persuasive discourse in that kind of form, especially by celebrities. They can make pronouncements, they can declare opinion, but this is then presented as a soundbite. It's not an argument, right? And so, and then people respond by either cheering or booing, basically. And so this is what we call in philosophy, we call it moralizing, right? It's taking a position on something. It's attempting to, you know, to put people on one side or the other, but it's not really an attempt to persuade. And if you can't engage in the kind of discourse in which you can persuade, then what are you doing? I mean, if you're a celebrity, it's presumably because you're good at doing something. Kind of do what you're good at and kind of avoid the circus. That's what I would say.
And I think, you know, I started off by talking about sort of two categories when I had, you know, musicians and actors. And I guess for today's discussion, I guess when I'm thinking actors, I'm thinking of TV and film, not necessarily stage actors.
Right.
And in some ways, to me, I guess there's a little difference, because I think as things have changed in how we listen to music, sure, there's Taylor Swift and there's Beyonce, and I'm sure there's a few other super big names out there that are truly trying to have a very broad appeal, or as broad appeal as they possibly can, and sell out the biggest venues in this country. But there aren't as many of those musicians as there used to be, right?
Right.
I mean, if you go back 25 years ago, and some of these folks are still around, but you had Elton John and Bruce Springsteen and Billy Joel, and the list could go on and on of people that and performers that really had a pretty broad appeal. So if you're not one of those big names, and there's fewer of them, like I said today, I wonder for a musician standpoint, if that's a way to sort of spin up an audience a little bit, is to take these positions because you know that you're going to help you find your audience by the positions you take. And I don't know if that's just smart business sense or if it's more than that.
We have some historical examples of that where musicians have done precisely that. For example, if you remember back, it was in 2003 that the Dixie Chicks, they were on stage in London just before the invasion of Iraq, and they said they were ashamed to be from the same state as the president, right?
Which was then
George W. Bush. And so, like, within a few, like, they just had all kinds of protests, and country music stations canceled their songs and all kinds of things. But then Toby Keith kind of really played to his audience by, like, on stage having these big photos of the lead singer from the Dixie Chicks along with a picture of Saddam Hussein, right, juxtaposing them. So he was doing that. He was taking up this alternate position that happened to be the really popular one in support of the invasion and support of the president.
And very patriotic. What was that very viewed patriotic. To be, or at least viewed to be very patriotic.
Played up to the audience.
Yeah.
And like, and that was, who knows, yeah, I assume it's probably a personal conviction, but as long as kind of a savvy move for him, because his fans really loved it.
And so, and I don't know if it, I get the sense that it was more, this is like, what, 20 years ago now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I get the sense, even more so 20 years ago, that the average country music fan was conservative and from the rural part of the United States and more likely to match the views of Toby Keith than the Dixie Chicks.
Yep.
I don't know that that's as true as it is today.
No, and even somebody like Taylor Swift kind of crosses over those boundaries.
Oh, right? She came up, I think, on the country side. I think that's a fairly accurate thing to say.
Yeah, and so her appeal isn't so much regional and genre-specific as it is generational, right? But here's the problem. Even somebody like Taylor Swift, who's, for most of her career, tried to stay out of political affiliation, just didn't comment on it at all until, I think, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
She made some remarks, but she's been very measured in her political remarks. But there's all this speculation and even a lot of criticism of her for her political views when she says very little. And this is kind of how things have changed in the last 20 years. Since the Dixie Chicks, the response that they got was shut up and sing. Like, yeah. We don't want to hear what you say. There's even a documentary made about them with that title, Shut Up and Sing. But like, nobody says that to Taylor Swift. And I think that's because the mood has changed. We now expect our celebrities to speak up. And I think that's because we expect everybody who has a platform to speak up and let their identities be known. And part of that is your political identity.
Yeah, because the music business has changed so much, and I'm kind of oversimplifying it. Of course, they do have, especially big singers do have relationships with labels, and they do have to, you know, I don't know if they have a boss necessarily, but they do have to kind of listen to some of the feedback they're getting from the studios. But you look at TV and movie actors, I mean, that's a little bit different thing because it's very tough to be entrepreneurial when you're a movie star because you're dependent upon TV shows, movie producers, what have you, to want to hire you, to want to bring you on the set. It's a much more ensemble operation. And I get the sense that because the perception, and I think to a great extent the reality, is the people in those top jobs in Hollywood very much do lean to the left. It's much easier for those people to take positions around the environment, around climate change, around anti-Trump positions, because the people who are hiring them probably agree with all those things. Do you think that it would be difficult to be an out and open and conservative movie star and still get lots of work today?
Absolutely. In fact, it's proven to have gotten some actors fired. Do you remember the person who was starring in the Mandalorian series? And I'm forgetting her name right now.
I don't. I think I've seen an episode or two of the show. I'm familiar with it, but not
but
very.
This was, I think, in probably around 2021 or so. But she expressed some fairly conservative-leaning views, both within the studio, but also on social media sites. She got removed from the series and was quite outspoken about it, that the reason she got removed is because she had conservative political views. And I think that's probably right. Of course, what got her fired was that she was out of step with everybody else. And so,
and not, again, to be everybody else, you're saying not necessarily her audience, but the people who are writing the paychecks.
Yes, the people who are writing the paychecks and her coworkers.
Yeah.
The people. So I find this kind of interesting that we were at one point where we didn't, as a public, we didn't want to hear people's views. And I think a lot of times we didn't really care what our coworkers' views were on a lot of social and political issues, as long as they did their job and they were decent people. Now there's pressure on everybody to kind of speak out. And I've heard this from artists who are relatively obscure. They might have a website where they're trying to sell a few paintings or something, and they're getting pressure because they have a, quote, platform to speak out, say, about the war in Gaza. And what I heard from one of them is, like, I really don't know that much about it. I'm not sure why people want me to speak out, but they think, like, there's a moral obligation. Like, if you have some kind of social media presence, you should make it useful. And this is what I think of as, there's this pressure to be a moralizer.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like I might be a visual artist who's, like, has some skill at painting, but I don't really have a lot to add to the public conversation.
And you're not doing artwork around the tragedy in Gaza.
Right. Really. Yeah. And I might not have much to add to that conversation. But for the moralizer, it's that you have to declare your position, which side you're on. It's not necessarily, it's not a matter of whether you can persuade or not. So I find that that's kind of where the mood of the public is right now. And that's why I say, like, I kind of think celebrities should stay out of that game, because it's not a good thing for our society anyway.
Well, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, kind of. Regular listeners of the show know that each episode we end with a moral dilemma where I ask you a question, yeah, and then you ask me a question. And I don't know if you remember, but well more than a year ago, I asked you a question kind of about this. And I
don't remember.
Okay. And how I phrased it was, I believe, is that you are an all-star third baseman for the New York Yankees, and you're one of the best players in baseball. And I said, and by the way, you also hold strong political beliefs. I think the question basically was, how outspoken about those beliefs would you be? And what you said at the time was, you said, as best I remember, that you wouldn't be, because your job is to attract a large fan base and to not alienate people from coming to the ballpark, and that those feelings, at least while you're a ball player, and you would keep to yourself. And that sort of seems like a similar view that you have today. And again, I think obviously sports stars are not all that different in many ways from entertainers.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised I said that, but, well, maybe not. I think you can say, on the one hand, everybody has a right to share whatever views they want. I mean, this is something we participate in a democracy. We certainly have a right to speak out, to share our opinions. And I wouldn't question that. I don't question any celebrity's right to share what they want to say. I think it's most effective when they can share it through the kind of medium in which they specialize. And so for many artists, like a singer-songwriter, you do it through your music, mm-hmm, right? And for visual artists, you might do that. When we have, so many famous examples in history of artists who've been really profound at shaping the way we see the world and see one another, which has this political effect. But they weren't doing art on the one hand and then going out and saying, and you should vote for this candidate, or you should take a position on this issue. You had people like Walt Whitman, who was writing poetry in which he just illustrated the wide variety of people that there are, and this love of people in all their idiosyncrasies and variety. And that is a political expression, but it's not a partisan expression, right? And then we had singer-songwriters like in the 1960s and 70s, like people like Bob Dylan. I mean, he wasn't going out and saying vote for somebody, but he's certainly, in his songs, were really powerfully political, right?
As long as you could understand him.
Yeah, you could read the liner notes.
I just alienated our Bob Dylan fan.
In those days, we had liner notes. I just don't think it's very fruitful for celebrities to enter into the kind of the social media partisan display that's going on, and which is, I think, particularly bad on X. And I don't even have an account. I don't participate on it. But if I don't know if you followed at all what's happened with J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. And this has been going on for years now.
For maybe 2 years, could be longer than that, but at least for 2 years. But just the other day, it was like she she responded to some critic of somebody criticized her on social media, saying why is she identifying or defending Nazis, because Nazis had burned trans books dealing with trans research. And she responded to that, something like, check your facts or check your research. And then all these people started piling on. And that's what it is people are trying to score points against one another, but there's no real attempt at learning something. And that's, see, this is the essence of morality or the essence of ethics, is like we've got to figure out through our shared discussion how we can live good lives. And that's really difficult to do, and it requires a certain amount of goodwill and the ability to be introspective and self-questioning. In those kinds of forms where you're sharing your view, you're not participating in that kind of conversation.
As we continue to crawl toward November and the presidential election, obviously, where I will assume that the two candidates that we will likely have, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, will be fanning out across the country, but of course they can't go everywhere, and you'll also have members of Congress and governors out there speaking on their behalf and trying to engage voters to vote in November. But you'll also see, and again, for reasons we discussed earlier, it's usually on the Democratic side, you will see performers, singers, actors, entertainers go out and hold events on behalf of the Democratic nominee, in this case Joe Biden, but they did that for Barack Obama, and back you go. Do you think there's any usefulness in that? Do you have a sense that that is I guess to stay on that for a second, there's some people believe that between now and the election day, Taylor Swift, who clearly is one of the most famous people in the world, is going to come out and tell her fans and followers to vote for Joe Biden. Again, we don't know that'll happen, but many people think it could. Is that useful? Do you think that is a way to get some people who might not otherwise participating in? And I guess, how do you feel about sort of campaigns courting celebrities for support?
I would think it's probably really effective when it's done well, because it's a spectacle, right? It's a show, and this is what our campaigns have become. And so celebrities are really good at that, you know, musicians and actors and, you know, pro athletes. I mean, people turn out for them. They want to pay attention to them.
Be near them.
And it attracts the news media, right?
Yeah.
So that's what the game is. But I don't necessarily think it's good for our democracy. You know, it creates energy, turns out the vote. It does all those things. Does it help people become more informed voters? Does it help people actually care about what the policy issues are? What's the win? I mean, it helps one or the other side win.
Yeah.
Right? So I can understand that it's effective. Is it good for society?
I've never said this sentence before, but if I am Taylor Swift,
mm-hmm.
and I know this huge following I have that sometimes is great and a way for me to make a lot of money and sometimes makes my life a bit of a challenge, but I truly believe that Joe Biden is just a incredibly better choice than Donald Trump, and that's what I think is Taylor Swift. Do I have a response? And I know that, like, I have these fans that if I say go out and buy 7-Up, they'll probably go out and buy 7-Up. So do I have a responsibility to go out and say, hey, this is really important, guys. This is how you should vote. Is that a responsibility she and other sort of top market entertainers have, if this is like a deeply held belief?
I don't know if it matters whether it's deeply held belief or not. I will say this. I remember reading about what Taylor Swift had gone on social media and told her fans to register to vote.
Yes.
Right? It wasn't something like 28,000 people registered in one day. It was the largest increase in voter registration in history.
Yeah, in a one-day event.
In a one-day event. I think that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And then you would hope that would be bipartisan.
And I don't have any problem with celebrities participating in the campaigns if they want to do that, if they find it's congruent with their interests, or if they deeply care about the outcome of election, if they want to do that, that's fine. Saying that they have an obligation to do it or a moral obligation, I'm not sure. I don't think that's the case.
Staying on that moral obligation point for a second, and I'm going to just pivot to sports, because I think, again, I think we agree that that is sort of in the celebrity culture that we're speaking of today. And we certainly have had in the music world, certainly in the rest of the entertainment world, a number of people who have come out as openly gay at sometimes at the top of their careers. We have yet to have that happen in any of the major sports.
Yeah.
I don't believe for a second that there's not in all the people who, and again, we're talking mostly men because that's what the major sports mostly are.
We did in football.
Well, but I mean,
but he wasn't a major. Assume he was a college player who got drafted.
Yeah, and did he even make the team?
I think he, yeah, he got drafted, but I he never became a starter.
Yeah. And there's been a few people in sports who have come out after the fact. But if again, I don't want to pick on anybody here because it's not fair. But if you're an all-star third baseman for a Major League Baseball team, yeah, and you're widely known in the baseball world and outside of it. And this is different, I guess, than coming out and saying vote for Donald Trump or vote for Joe Biden. But you were talking about the responsibility one has in that profession, not only to be a good, I guess that's sort of the question, is you want to be a good person in your field. If you're playing baseball, you want to hit a lot of home runs and run as fast as you can. But you also want to be a good role model. You don't want to be out there doing stuff that makes you look bad. But if you are living a life in the closet, do you think that you have an obligation to come out because you know that people will look at you and say, and look at that differently? And I think, you know, as someone who's gay, that I think that's a discussion that it happens a bit in the gay community. And I'd just be curious your take on that.
Do you follow Ted Lasso?
I've watched the whole series.
Do you remember the series in which that was one of the issues?
Yes, there was a player on there who was sort of the same thing, where he was kind of not the star of the team, but certainly a starter. Yeah. And he was living kind of a quiet gay life. And I believe he came out to the team. And did he, and refresh me now, but it's been a while, did he come out to the public as well?
I believe so.
Okay. And maybe with the help of another, I don't want to give the whole show away here, but it'd be with the help of another cast member who was portraying a gay journalist, and they kind of
That's right. And I'm forgetting a lot of the details of that right now because it's been quite a while.
Yeah.
But I was thinking at the time that it was handled exceptionally well, kind of showing the moral conflict that he had between what is thinking it like an obligation to let his fans and the public know, obligation to his teammates, and then like his own sense of privacy, and like where is that boundary between the public and the private life? And I thought it was just handled well as over several episodes.
Yeah, and that show was known for handling things, I guess, with a strong emotional intelligence, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Again, I don't think it's possible to answer a question like that in general. I think there would certainly be very strong, morally pertinent reasons for somebody to take a public position, but there also might be other reasons in the person's life for them not to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what has to be weighed. And so it's hard just to say, yeah, they would have a moral obligation that they must speak out.
Because it's probably not going to be easy to do so. And, of course, they realize that.
Yes. And then the person's in a relationship. What are their competing obligations within the relationship, if they are in a relationship, right? That sort of thing. And I think one of the reasons I brought up the Ted Lasso show is that there's the obligations to the teammates, right?
Yeah, and being a distraction or off the field.
Right.
And so whether...
Can I ask you this? So,
sure.
So I brought up the example earlier of somebody who's not a celebrity, but they've got some kind of a platform. They've got some social media presence. So it could be an artist, could be like a local musician
mm-hmm.
who, say, has a job but also plays, you know, venues in the community, something like mm-hmm. that. And they're getting pressure from friends and fans to say, like, you need to speak out and share your views on issues like the war on Gaza. What do you think? You have an obligation to, because you have a public presence,
mm-hmm.
even though it's not very large, do you have an obligation just by that fact?
I guess depend. I think if it was something I felt strongly about, sure. I think that, well, an obligation's different than the, yeah, you said obligation. I was thinking, you know, certainly I think the mistake people make is taking positions on things they don't know much about, but that's not what right. you're, or care much about, but that's not what you're saying here. Should they, do they have the obligation to speak out? I guess it, to me, it's sort of really maybe a little bit in this case, because they have a little bit of a presence in the city, in their community, in the entertainment world. If you're Beyonce, you have a much bigger presence than the person you describe. And I think as you stair-step up from the community musician to Beyonce, Taylor Swift, whomever, that your obligation grows, just like it does around, I mean, I think any person in those positions will tell you the worst thing about those jobs, if that's what you call them, is you lose any bit of privacy you might have. And the biggest upside is that you have a lot of money in your bank account. And but I think as part of being someone who is so widely known, I think in today's world, you are kind of expected to take positions on things that you care about. I think the mistake people make, though, is feeling like they have to care about everything and have an opinion about everything. And I think that's a mistake celebrities make. I think that's a mistake regular people make.
So Michael Jordan was really notorious for not taking a position on anything.
Nope, and I didn't know that. But at one point, of course, he was maybe the most famous person in the world.
Yeah, and there was a lot of pressure on him to be a champion of different causes, to mm-hmm. endorse candidates, and he just refused.
Do you know now why? I'm guessing you know more about him than I do.
Well, I think it was like he had a very large fan base mm-hmm. that was, you know, split, and anything he did in that realm would just
splinter it.
And he was I think I'm accurate in from things that I've heard, like he was a very savvy business person who was had all these endorsements, including the really infamous Nike endorsements,
yeah,
right?
A lot of them made probably more money outside of basketball than in basketball, I would imagine.
Yeah, and as soon as he starts taking political positions, you start to erode that support, and I'm sure Nike wouldn't like that either, right? And so I don't know what consider if he was just saying, I don't really know a lot about that, so
yeah.
I'm not going to venture into it, or if it was just a business decision. But this was in extreme opposition to athletes like Muhammad Ali and
yeah.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which were just a generation before him. I think he really set a standard for celebrity neutrality,
but
in the 80s and 90s, especially.
But just by the little bit you told me, and I'm not an expert on Jordan, but if everything you told me is the way I understand it, it seems to me like he made the choice. Is what I'm hearing is, I'm not going to. Assuming he cared about something, then I'm not going to talk about that and try to, you know, make the world a better place. I just want to keep cashing the checks from Nike and the NBA and all my other dozens of sponsors. To me, that's more important. I don't think that's like a great ethical thing to say or position to take.
No, he didn't attract any admirers for that.
Okay.
But I think there were some people who said, well, he wouldn't really have a lot of influence on these things anyway. He would just divide his fan base into people who already agreed with him or who disagreed. And I'm not sure if that's the case.
Yeah.
I think Muhammad Ali actually, I mean, he had a lot of detractors, but he also advanced the civil rights movement.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, yeah, to say that every single person's opinions on every single issue are so calcified that they can't be changed by talking to family members, friends, reading things that may open their eyes, or hearing opinions of people who they respect. I think all those things can change people's minds. And I yes, we talk a lot on this show and everywhere about how polarized we are, but I don't think we're immovable.
No, I don't think we are either. But I think we ought to be moved through persuasion. And that's my beef with the celebrity endorsements of candidates or speaking out on social issues is it's oftentimes not persuasion. And I'm really coming to this view kind of by, like, I've been following what's happening both with Taylor Swift and J.K. Rowling, because with J.K. Rowling, she's just getting slammed on the progressive side. And what's happened is people are scouring back through books that, you know, like, books that people had read 20 years before.
And loved.
Now they're going through and they're looking for any sentence that might betray something like what her political views. Look, she's really a Nazi. I mean, yeah. This is the latest claim that she's a Nazi or a Nazi sympathizer, which is just ridiculous. But on the other hand, you know, you have these critics of Taylor Swift saying, well, she's dumb and her music sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a direct quote.
And that's also not true.
That's also
certainly
not
dumb.
Right, right. And you know, I don't care what you think about her music, but it certainly has a certain appeal to a lot of people. It's once celebrities enter into that realm, they're no longer in the realm where persuasion is even possible. And I have a problem with that. And I wish we could. My desire is to get back into, like, meaningful dialogue about issues that allow for the ability of compromise, where we're not demonizing somebody because they disagree with us.
So I wanted to close this subject or this topic, this part of the show, whatever we're closing, with a question that I'll ask you and then I'll answer too. If suddenly somehow you became a celebrity ethicist, I don't think there ever has been such a thing, but you're as big a celebrity as there is. Would you take, and maybe as an ethicist, you would be, maybe that's a bad example. You're just a celebrity actor.
Yeah.
For the sake of discussion.
So let me give you an example. Somebody who came close at being a celebrity ethicist, Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Went on these lecture tours.
Yeah.
Now we're talking in the 1800s.
Yeah.
But then, like,
I followed him on Twitter back then.
But but before the Civil War, like, he was writing abolitionist essays.
Yeah.
Like, and he was giving speeches. But that was part of his writing.
Yeah.
Like, so it was, and that's what I feel about me. Like, it's part of my job to try to make moral arguments and take positions on things. But I'm not on the one hand, you know, writing essays and then saying, oh, and then you should go vote for so-and-so.
Sure.
They're combined, right?
But if you became famous for something outside of ethics, maybe we'll do that. I don't know. You have your folks.
For fishing, for example.
I don't know. Whatever it might
be.
A famous
angler.
Yeah. What do you think you would use your fame to drive any particular, you know, and again, you might just take, I mean, some people take the cause of raising money for cancer prevention. That's a cause, and that's not one that's terribly controversial. But do you think you would use your fame in any which way, or do you think you would take the Michael Jordan approach and just say, in effect, no comment?
No, I would use it. Yeah. I think I would use it. Which seems to be inconsistent with everything you're saying.
Yeah,
yeah.
I guess I'm surprised to hear you say that.
Yeah, you've got me questioning everything I've just said in the last hour.
Well, I'm sorry, dear listener.
Well, I'm not questioning everything I said, but I'm just thinking, but I would want to be really measured. I would want to be really deliberate about that, because I think there are ways of using a celebrity status that really ends up being counterproductive.
I think what I would do is, I don't want to come away as sound like I don't care about the environment, but there's enough people out there on that issue. And there's a lot of people out there on other issues that we're all aware of. I think I would look for an issue, and at the top of my head, I can't think of what it would be right now, but I would look for an issue that, one, I care a lot about, and two, not many people are talking about. And I guess as I say that, maybe one that comes to mind, and again, and I would have to be a celebrity outside of my current role, but I might tell people a lot about why local news matters and and talking about something that, you know, celebrities don't talk about very much, and really find kind of a little niche area that I would try to talk about as much as I could.
Well, here's the difference on this, Scott. I think that would be really wise, but you could do that, and you could do it in a way in which you gave your reasons, right?
Yeah.
And you tried to persuade people of why they should pay attention more to local news,
yeah,
and why that's good for our society.
Absolutely.
And good for them. But it wouldn't be just, you wouldn't be just taking sides on an issue in which the battle lines had already been really well drawn.
I think that's true. I think that's true because I feel like there's plenty of people doing that on both sides. And I would, again, unless I'm at the top of the celebrity food chain, that I don't think I'm going to be heard or make a difference. But I think I could make a difference about other issues that people aren't talking about. So I think that's what I would look for.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
We end each show by tackling an ethical dilemma, and Rick, here is my question for you. Susan, a close friend of yours at work, is getting ready to retire in a couple of months. You know she's excited about starting the next chapter in her life, and you also know she does not want a big deal made of her departure. After learning that others in your department are planning a surprise party on her very last day at the office, you advise them that that's not what Susan wants. Your coworkers, however, say that everyone likes a party, and they ignore your advice. Do you let Susan know about the plans for the surprise party?
Well, I'd want to know a little bit more about the context. So in this situation, are you closer friends with Susan than anybody else, any of the people that are planning the party?
In your case, yes. I will say that you've worked with, we'll say that you and Susan have both worked there for 25 years. You're long colleagues. And not only have you worked with her longer than anyone else in the department, she's probably the person you're closest to. And you're obviously sincerely going to miss her, but you're also planning on staying in touch with her and you're happy for her retiring in a way that she wants.
In that case, I absolutely would tell her, because she would feel betrayed if I didn't.
Because she would know that you knew.
Yes. She would know that I knew and that I had chosen not to tell her, even though she had expressly told me and confided in me that she didn't want a big deal made. If I had conveyed those wishes to a group of coworkers and they were just ignoring it, then I would say, yeah, I would tell Susan.
So I'm Susan, and I say, Rick, I know this is not what I want. Go and tell them we've spoken, and tell them this is just not what I want to have happen. You would have no hesitation in doing that?
I would have some hesitation, because that would be a kind of an ugly discussion. I assume they would be pretty upset.
Yeah, that you spoiled the surprise.
I spoiled the surprise. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons I asked that question about, like, how close is that relationship with Susan and then the relationship with the other coworkers, because you're picking sides.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, does it occur to you that even though you are closest to Susan, your relationship with her will soon be changing, and you won't be seeing Susan every day. And these other people, you'll still be seeing regularly. Does that make it uncomfortable? Yeah. Or does that make you change your mind?
No, it makes it uncomfortable, but it would probably be something I'd want to talk to Susan about.
Yeah.
And just say, like, look, I wanted to let you know, but if you want me to go and tell them not to do the party, that puts me in a difficult position. I'm going to have to work with them for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think if I have a really good relationship with Susan, we would figure something out. Like,
well, let's say, let's pursue that for a second.
So one thing that we might figure out is she says, okay, I'm just gonna go to it. But now I'm glad I'm forewarned that, you know, like it's not gonna take me off guard. I can just kind of play along with it and then leave early.
Okay, so let's stay with.
Or I can call in sick that day.
You'll see, those are sort of the two scenarios. So let's stick with number one, that you tell her, she'll be like, well, I'll make the best of this, and half hour later, she's out the door, and maybe she has a gift card to a local restaurant out of this.
Yeah.
Do you tell the organizers you told Susan in that scenario?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think I would.
Okay. And let's say scenario number two is Susan's like, not just as this, she does not want any part of this. She has a discussion with her supervisor who's not involved in any of this, saying, you know, I'm just not going to be there the last day. All I'm going to be doing is going to this party. I don't want a part of this. So Thursday is my last day, not Friday. Supervisor says, of course, that's fine. You are read in on all this. Do you say anything to the party planners?
No.
Okay.
Because they planned the party for themselves.
Well,
they obviously didn't do it for Susan, right?
Well, see, that gets to the absolute question, the final question of this. My sincere belief is that in almost every case, when somebody is throwing a surprise party for someone else, whether it's a retirement, a birthday, whatever else, it's really because it's fun to throw a surprise party. Mm-hmm. It's not because it's more fun for the person who's having the party thrown. Because in some ways, let's just say, for the sake of discussion, that Susan's sort of like open to a surprise party, right? She thinks it'd be perfectly nice.
Yep.
And the clock's ticking, and Friday's coming, and nobody said anything, and she's going to start to feel like, wow, I'm walking out the door here, and nobody's going to. And of course, you realize at the last minute that, yes, there was something planned, but there's like days where you think that nobody's going to notice. I don't think that's good.
No. No, I think there are people who love being surprised in that way.
Really?
Yes.
I'm not one of those, by the way.
Okay.
Are you?
No, I'm not. my wife loves surprise party. I put on a surprise birthday party for her, and she thought it was great. All these people showed up that she wasn't expecting. She thought we were just going to go out for a drink one afternoon for her birthday. I took her to this tavern, and here's all these people that knew her, and she loved it. I would not like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me, I think it's sort of the cloak and dagger planning part is appealing to people, and sort of this whispering behind people's backs and getting everything set up. But I think too, and again, I'm sure if your wife loved it, then that's terrific. But also, I would think that if you knew that a week from Friday, you're going to go to this place, and they, in your case, you know, your husband's gotten all these people together, and they're going to be there, and you're going to have a great time. Well, that's something you'll look forward to for like a week or two, and that's like part of the nice process of this. And I just don't understand what the appeal is for the person.
You are a planner, aren't you?
Well, of course I am.
Yeah, so somebody who's not a planner likes the just having it happen and not anticipating it all week long, and it's just a great thing. But people who are planners don't like it. You like the anticipation,
yeah,
even more than the event, probably.
Well, maybe as much as, sure.
Yeah.
We talked about that on a recent show when we were talking about vacations and travel.
Yeah.
That to me, part of the enjoyment for me is sort of the anticipatory part of it. Like, hey, you know, a week from now, I'll be sitting on the beach or whatever. And that's kind of fun versus like you know, somebody just saying, by the way, you have next week off work. We're heading out on a cruise ship. Well, I mean, great. I'm not going to say no, but I just assume it's been part of the plan.
When I was in college, I remember my aunt had planned a surprise party for my dad's, I guess at that time was his 50th birthday. He did not like birthday parties. He absolutely did not like surprise parties. He did not like being center of attention. Anybody who knew him knew that he would not like this sort of thing. But she loved throwing parties.
Yep.
And so she got everybody together in this restaurant for a surprise party. She convinced him that she was taking him out to dinner at this night. He really didn't want to go out, but she convinced him to go. Everybody showed up for the surprise party, and he hated it. And he sat in the middle of the room and refused to talk to anybody.
Huh.
And I was out of town during the time. I was away at college.
Probably for the best.
Yep. I came back that summer, and I remember hearing several people, relatives and friends of family, they would bring up how awful my dad had been that night.
Mm.
And I thought, like, how unfair was that to him?
Yeah. Like, on a day that's supposed to be a good day for him.
Yeah. And they all wanted to celebrate it in a way that he was really uncomfortable with, and then blamed him for being uncomfortable with it. I thought that was really unfair. So that's part of my reaction to Susan. Like, don't put her through something.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't want to go through.
It's funny that it reminded me, and it's a very different scenario, but I was probably 5 years old, and our family was moving from the small town where my parents both grew up, like 5 hours away. And we were out at a pizza parlor one night. It was my parents and my sister and me. And my sister is 8 years older than me, so she was probably like 13, we'll say. And she pulls me aside. Somehow, this way, I still have this vivid memory. She pulls me aside and says, just so you know, when we get back to the house, there's going to be a bunch of people waiting there. Like, we were moving like 2 days from then, kind of like a big surprise going away party. And I assume, just knowing my parents, that they probably enjoyed that and thought it was a fun thing. But I'll tell you, I felt like such a grown-up that I was in on this. I was like, I don't know if you've ever seen that Saturday Night Live skit where there's the Kristen Wiig played this character where she knew there was a surprise coming, but like couldn't keep it inside her. She was so like wanting to tell. And like, that's how I was as this kid, was I'm like, we get home, all the people are going to jump out. I mean, I was like so excited because I knew that I was in on the secret. But I kept my mouth shut and everybody got there. And so it was fun for a five-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's fun for anybody else.
And even telling me about this, you're describing your excitement at the anticipation.
Yeah, well,
not
that's
at
true.
The event so much.
Yeah, that's true. I don't remember a thing about the party itself. I just remember my sister pulling me aside of the pizza place and saying, guess what's going to happen?
Well, maybe this is the moral of the story. If you're going to throw a surprise party, make sure you know what sort of person you're dealing with.
That is absolutely true. Yeah. Do you know what's also absolutely true, Rick?
What?
The Ethical Life podcast is a production of Lee Enterprises. You can subscribe to The Ethical Life, and you can do that wherever you get your podcast. And be sure to check out Rick's column about ethics, and it touches on many of the topics we talked about today. And that can be found on all Lee newspaper websites. For Rick Kite, I am Scott Rotta. Thank you for joining us.